Hello and welcome to Go For It. I'm your host, Paul Gannon. For the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. At 646-727-3070, you can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can send messages to the show on Twitter at GoForItGant. And while you're there on Twitter, make sure you give me a follow at GoForItGant. Expected to be joined today by Cowboys wide receiver Jesse Holley, and Jesse's going to talk about his Cowboys and his offseason and what he's going to do next year for him to take that next step and for the Cowboys to take that next step. And we're also going to get his opinion on these playoffs and the divisional round today. So we're going to be joined by Jesse Holley, and also we're going to be joined by actor Boo Boo Stewart. And Boo Boo Stewart is in Breaking Dawn, a movie that's doing some crazy numbers. So it's going to be great and interesting to talk to Boo Boo and talk about Breaking Dawn and everything that's going on with him. He also has some music out, so we're going to talk about that as well. And also, 2012 Hall of Fame finalist, 11-time Pro Bowler. He's been on here a lot. The one, the only, Willie Rofe. He's going to stop on by. We're going to preview the divisional round today. A lot of good football today. A lot of good football tomorrow. This is a great weekend of football if you're a fan of the National Football League. This is a great, 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 great week. A great week. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm definitely looking forward to it. I was looking forward to the wild card round, and I'm looking forward to this round. And I said it, you know, last week, and I'll say it again. This week and last week are one of the two best weekends in the National Football League for the simple fact you got games Saturday, you got games Sunday. This is it. After this, it's only two more games, and then you have the Super Bowl. So this is a great week of football, and the NFL, they do a great job. Many years back, they switched the game into primetime, and it's been working wonders. The primetime game on Saturday night is a primetime game, and a game that is compelling, and a game that a lot of people are looking forward to. That is Tim Tebow and the Denver Broncos going to Foxborough to face the great Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. Now, a lot of people last week had the Steelers beating the Patriots. A lot of people last week did not the Patriots, had the Steelers beating the Broncos. A lot of people last week did not give the Denver Broncos an opportunity or a chance in that particular football game. Nobody gave the Broncos a chance. Nobody gave the Broncos a chance except for me. And if you didn't hear it last week, you take a listen right now, because I predicted that the Broncos will win. Just listen in. Big Ben is not Big Ben, and I don't think he will be, and he has not been these past couple weeks. I think the Denver Broncos, not think, I believe, I know, actually, that the Denver Broncos will get this victory, pull off the upset, and win this playoff game. Big Ben.
You heard it.
You heard it. Your boy right here told you straight up what was going to happen. I told everybody what was going to happen. And guess what happened? The Denver Broncos pulled off the upset and beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, hey, let's get this straight. I didn't expect Tim Tebow to throw for 316 yards. I didn't expect Tim Tebow to shred the Pittsburgh Steelers secondary. I didn't expect that to happen, but I did expect the Broncos to win, and mainly, and I talked about it a lot last week, but mainly my main reason was because of Ben Roethlisberger and his health, because of Marquise Pouncey not being there, because of Rashard Mendenhall not being there, because of Ryan Clark not being there. And if you saw that last play, Ryan Clark's replacement, Ryan Mundy, who actually appeared on this show this past summer, Ryan Mundy was in the game, and he was responsible, essentially, for what happened in a lot of ways. He came up, tried to fake the blitz. He could not get back in time. Ike Taylor had outside position. Demaryius Thomas caught the ball over the middle, stiff arm. 80 yards later, ball game. The Denver Broncos move on to Foxborough. The Denver Broncos move on to Foxborough and face Tom Brady and the Patriots. I wasn't shocked. I was not surprised. As a matter of fact, if you want to hear it again, Jeremy, you listen as well. Let me play it for you one more time. Big Ben is not Big Ben, and I don't think he will be. He has not been these past couple weeks. I think the Denver Broncos, not think, I believe, I know, actually, that the Denver Broncos will get this victory, pull off the upset. And there you have it. There you have it. Enough said. Enough said. I don't have to say anymore. I don't need to say anymore. I called it. I called it. I knew it was going to happen. I knew. I foretold that this whole situation. I foretold this whole situation. I knew it was going to happen. I knew. I knew that Tim Tebow and the Denver Broncos would win. I knew it. I knew it. Man.
Paul.
Man, I just love patting
Paul.
Myself on the back. Go ahead,
Paul.
Jeremy.
I mean,
You knew that
in overtime, Tim Tebow was going to throw probably one of the worst passes the NFL has ever seen, and his receiver was going to probably, you know, throw one of the best stiff arms the NFL has ever seen.
Well,
yes,
I don't think
you
must
that.
Not have seen that play. That ball was in stride. That was a perfectly thrown ball.
Hey,
Tim Tebow throws the ball around and throws some crazy balls. But that was a perfect ball by Tim Tebow. That ball he threw to Demaryius Thomas.
Paul, but let's keep it real.
Real quick, I give Thomas more credit than Tebow in that particular play because Thomas was the one that used the stiff arm and just took it to the house from there. I mean,
let's keep this real. There was not one Steeler more than 5 yards off the ball. They literally, like when you really want to talk about your prognostications, understand the first place is finished from overtime. The Steelers, I will say this, the Steelers showed, I think, a level of just ultimate disrespect for a quarterback, considering the fact, if you look at that play, I mean, if you really are a prognosticator, Paul, you really knew that that was how they were going to win the game.
Again, I said it. I prefaced my comments earlier in the show. You heard it. I said, I didn't think that Tim Tebow and the Broncos would win the way they did. I didn't expect 316 yards. I didn't expect that. That's not. I didn't expect that at all.
But it wasn't.
I was shocked.
It wasn't 316, Paul. It wasn't
316 yards.
Paul.
Tim Tebow was 10 for 21, 316 yards.
Tim Tebow was 9 for 20 for 316 less 80. I mean, Paul, that play. That play was a touchdown before it started, only because listen, Paul, if you could have made that throw, okay? You could have made that throw.
No, I could not have made that throw. That was a perfect pass, a lot of velocity, a well-thrown football.
Right, it was a lot of velocity. It was a 7-yard slant, and there was no one there. I don't think you really. I don't think you saw that play. I really then don't think you saw that play.
I saw the play just perfectly fine. It was a pass thrown. Demaryius Thomas. He threw it in stride, stiff arm. He took it to the house. Bottom line. Hey, I'm one of these guys. I still don't believe Tim Tebow is an NFL quarterback. Well, he is an NFL quarterback, but I don't think he's going to be a very good NFL quarterback. I still do not believe in Tim Tebow. So let's be clear about that right now. I still don't believe in Tim Tebow. But I got to give him credit. He was the man on Sunday. And, you know, 316 yards is 316 yards. And this is against a very, very good Steelers defense. A very, very good Steelers defense. This wasn't against a bad defense. This was against a very good Steelers defense. So you got to give him credit. 10 for 21 is not great. Granted, that's not great at all. But the 316 yards is. And the victory in overtime is also very great. Let's bring in now someone who is great as well. 11-time Pro Bowler, 2012 Hall of Fame finalist, the one, the only, Willie Rofe. Willie, how are you, sir?
Doing good. Well, we also had two D linemen that got hurt during the game. We also had Ryan Clark, who couldn't play, that was out during the game. So they weren't at full. The Steelers' defense wasn't at full strength.
But you, Willie, I understand that. Those are fair points. Those are very, very fair points. But this is a guy, Tim Tebow, who the week before was 6-for-22 for 60 yards against the Kansas City Chiefs. No one did throw for this type of yardage against the Steelers. 316 yards.
I give him credit. But I mean, he's throwing pretty good at times. In the course of those seven games, he's made some big plays, and he gets better as the game goes on. He has to get in the rhythm. But Tim Tebow will get better. I think if he has a good offseason, if he goes and learns from Steve Young or goes and trains with some of these quarterbacks and learns more, I think he can get better. One thing you can't take away from Tebow is his heart and his toughness. He is tough, and he is going to play to the end. And he realized that they had run that defense before, and they were stacking the line because they thought he was going to run the ball because they had ran out of that formation in the game in the fourth quarter or whatever. They ran out of that same formation, and then he threw the ball out of the formation, and he tricked the Steelers. He caught Dick LeBeau and tricked the Steelers, and he threw a perfect pass because he had missed a couple of those slant routes early in the game.
And I forgot to add Dick LeBeau, the great Dick LeBeau. I mean, you got to give him credit for what he did. And, you know, again, 10 for 21 is not great. I mean, it's under 50%. But the 316 yards and what he did for the Broncos to win that game is impressive.
And he didn't turn the ball over, did he?
He did not. He did not.
He did not turn the ball over. We did one thing what he spoke to. He didn't throw a pick. He did not turn the ball over.
Right. And that's big. That's big. And I think that's going to be very big this week against the New England Patriots. I mean, the last time Tim Tebow and the Patriots, last time the Broncos played Tim Tebow and the Patriots, not Tim Tebow, Tom Brady and the Patriots, Tim Tebow turned the ball over. He fumbled the ball a lot. He fumbled the ball twice, and they lost one of those fumbles, but he turned the football over.
Well, they were getting after him. They were getting after him, too, though.
They were. They were.
The D-line, they were blitzing him.
But you got to look at it this way also in that game. In that game, the Denver Broncos rushed for over 200 yards in that game. Rushed for over 200 yards in that game.
It won't happen in England.
252 to be exact. I think it ends here against the Patriots, but it's going to be close. And I give the Broncos a shot.
No, it won't be close. It won't be that close.
Come on. Paul, come on. I mean, really.
It won't be close.
Where do you see this? Where do you see it being close? Where?
Well, you got to understand. You got to understand. The New England defense is not a very good defense. So you can move the ball on them. You can run the ball on them, like the Broncos did the last time they played this ball club.
Well, they better keep the clock. If they want any chance, they got to control. You're right. If they want any chance, they got to keep the clock. They're gonna have to take the time position. I don't think Tim Tebow will have a whole bunch of 3 and outs in this game, and I think the Patriots will beat them by at least 10.
By 10.
At least
10. I think the Broncos have a legitimate shot here. I don't think they're gonna win.
Come on,
Jeremy.
What do you say, Jeremy?
I agree with you. You're on point. Paul, I have to be, like, I have to say this to you. Like, when you really look at how poorly the Steelers played, I mean, honestly, the Broncos did nothing to win that game. The Steelers lost every aspect of that game. They lost it offensively. They lost it defensively. And that was arguably just, that was a play that showed no respect, absolutely positively no respect. Willie, you're an NFL. You're going to be a Hall of Famer one day. That first play coming out of overtime, does that not show absolutely no respect for an offense?
Yeah, I mean, for them to do that, they weren't going to let him run the ball. Basically, they stacked him, weren't going to let him ball. And, they, he hadn't done a lot during the game, Jeremy. So, I mean, They didn't think he could do it.
We need prayer for Paul. I mean, obviously, you know, he goes to mass regularly, but it's not enough for him.
Don't pray Tebow for me.
Hold on.
You guys, I get the sense that you guys are taking some things away from what his performance on Sunday. I mean, hey, I'm a guy who I still don't believe in Tim Tebow. I still think the Broncos still have to look at the quarterback position. But we cannot discount what happened on Sunday. I mean, he was good. I'm not going to say he was very good. He was good.
He played. He's a hell of a competitor. Well, you can't take away his competitive edge. Tim Tebow is going to compete to the last whistle. We all know that. Everybody knows he's going to compete. And if you do some stupid things like a lot of teams have done this year, he will take advantage of it, and he's done it. So when nobody said Tim Tebow is smart, he's smart and he's competitive. And if he sees you keep doing this same thing, he will beat you. So we know that he will eventually figure it out, and he will eventually beat you if you do the same thing over.
No, I agree. I mean, I think, honestly, I will say, he is mentally, he's a quarterback in the fact that you can honestly see, like Willie, you just said, mentally, he knows how to make these reads at the line of scrimmage. He saw, there is no question he knew where to throw that ball. But the problem with him is, as Paul said, ultimately, if you're the Broncos and you really think this is your franchise quarterback, you are making a sad mistake. Fundamentally, I don't believe that at 6'3", 230, this guy would have been a quarterback already. He's not. He's a hybrid. He's a running back or a tight end or maybe a receiver or probably, I mean, a hell of a strong safety.
Well, I think he's proven to this point that he's not an NFL, he's not a franchise quarterback. But I think he's proven to this point that he can at least be a backup, if not a little more, a French starter somewhere. But to me, I think we look at Tebow and we see some of the things he's done this year. And the Broncos are in this position because of the defense and their running game. But Tebow has a lot to do with why they're here in these playoffs right now. I think, you know, as I still agree at the end of the day with Jeremy, he's still not a quarterback that I'm going to give my franchise to. I just cannot do it. I can't do it. I don't believe. But to Willie's point, he's a hell of a competitor. He has all the intangibles in the world. I just don't think he has enough of the tangibles to be a quality NFL quarterback for the long haul. But this has been a great ride for him.
And I say you got to give him an offseason and let him see if he can get better. You got to give him an offseason, and you got to see if the kid can get better. So I'm not going to say he's not an NFL quarterback. I'm going to say you got to give him time and see if he can get better.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I think at this point, if they didn't win last week, I don't think he gets the shot next year. I think with the victory that they got against the Steelers, that guarantees him a shot in 2012. That guarantees him being a starter in 2012 for the Broncos. We'll see what happens in 2012, and we'll see what happens today against the Patriots. But, Willie, you believe the Patriots win by 10-plus points in this game?
I believe they win by 10-plus points. Too much.
Okay.
Tom Brady, first of all, Tom Brady has won the playoff game the last three. And Tom Brady's got something to prove today. The team will rally around Tom Brady. I mean, if you think about it, other than Tom Brady and Deion Branch, the rest of these guys have more rings. This isn't the same New England Patriots team. The roster turned over every usually in the NFL every 4 or 5 years. So I don't believe any of these guys other than Deion Branch who they picked up with a trade and Tom Brady were on the Super Bowl team that they won. And I think the last Super Bowl, what was it, 2003?
2003 against the Panthers.
None of these guys were on the team. None of them.
Right. You're right. I mean, it's a fair point. But I agree with you, Willie. I mean, I think the Broncos win, but I don't think they win by 10-plus points.
Not Broncos. Patriots.
Not the Broncos. I'm sorry, the Patriots. I believe the Patriots win, but I think the Broncos will be competitive, and I don't believe they'll lose by 10-plus points.
You're saying that if the Patriots go up and start scoring touchdowns, you're telling me that when they start blitzing the Broncos, they're going to be able to keep up. if the Patriots jump out on them, you're telling me they're going to be able to keep up with the Patriots.
Wait, you said they're going to tell me that. I'll say this. The Pittsburgh Steelers, they have a much better defense than the New England Patriots. And Tim Tebow threw for 316 yards.
Okay, but the Patriots defense started taking over the last time they started doing when they played in Denver, and they beat them by more than 10, didn't they? So I'm saying in the course of the game, if the Patriots start scoring points, that's gonna free up the defense to do different things. They're not gonna have 20 yards rushing again, and if they get behind, they're gonna have to throw the ball. Correct? If they start having to throw the ball, what's Tebow gonna do?
Well, I said this last week that in order for the Broncos to beat the Steelers, Tebow had to make plays. Tebow had to be an NFL quarterback. He was an NFL quarterback last Sunday. In order for the Broncos to be competitive against the Patriots, Tim Tebow has to be an NFL quarterback. And I think he could do it.
You had Big Ben hobbling around last week. So he should have probably not been in the game. You had Big Ben hobbling around. The Steelers' offensive line was not protecting them the way they should have. Okay, you had a defense with the Steelers that had three starters that weren't playing. You're not going to be playing everything that could have happened fell into the lap for the Broncos to get a win. It did. It fell into the lap for them to be successful last week. And then you had Mendenhall out because he tore his ACL the week before.
Right.
So everything that could happen to go to Broncos' favor did happen. It's going to be a whole different monster when it goes to play New England this week because New England got a lot of weapons. And they got Gronkowski that had what the best year a tight end ever had as far as catching touchdowns in one NFL season. So it's going to be – and you still got Hernandez who killed him when they played up in Denver that Tebow played with in Florida. So it's going to be a whole different animal they're going to play this week.
All the points that you make are great points, Willie. But we look at this Broncos team and somehow, some way – they found a way at 8-8 to win the NFC West. Somehow, some way, they found a way to beat the mighty Steelers. Somehow, some way, Tim Tebow found a way to throw for 316 yards against a very good Steelers defense, though the defense was a little hobbled, but it still was a very good defense. I have to say, going into New England, he can keep it close against that Patriots defense. I'm not saying he's going to beat them.
A good older – that Steelers defense is a good older defense, too. Let's put in the word older.
But they also – you got to remember, they also did not have Ryan Clark. I mean, they were missing pieces not throughout – like, they missed pieces throughout the whole game. And as Willie said, they had two injuries. I really don't – you called that they were going to win this great game. And as I said, Paul, you are Nostradamus, so tell us when the world will end. But please –
thank you.
I mean – Don't act as if the Steelers, they lost this game. They played horribly. And the worst part was, they were in reality, and I say this in all seriousness, as Willie said, they showed absolutely no respect for their opponent. And when you go into overtime showing no respect for your opponent, to think that you can't lose, because Tebow is an NFL player, he's an NFL starter, they showed no respect. And when you are that brazen, you are looking to get upset.
Well, guys, answer this question. Did you expect the Broncos to beat the Steelers last week?
No.
I didn't expect them to beat them until I was watching the game. And when they started having all those guys go down and when Big Ben was hobbling around, I thought they were going to get beat.
Okay, fair enough.
Willie, you honestly thought when they got to overtime, when they gave up 10
unanswered points, I thought they were going to get beat during the course of the game. I thought the game would be close, and when I started watching the game and watching Big Ben and watching these guys go down, I said, Tebow's going to win this game. Tebow, hey, it makes for a great script, but it won't continue this week. The movie was great. Tebow's throwing a great movie, the 316 and all that stuff. It's been a great movie for the year, but the movie is this week.
We'll see.
Okay.
I agree. I think the movie does end this week.
Okay.
But it's going to be a very good ending because I think it's going to be a close football game. I think it's going to be a close football game. But we'll see. We'll see. We shall see. And Willie, earlier today, your Saints, they played the 49ers. The 49ers are a team that they play defense. They only allow 10 points per game at home, so they play tough at home on the defensive side of the football. The Saints are 3-2 outside of the dome. They're very beatable outside of the dome. Will the 49ers defense slow down this Saints team?
Or if we're in the playoffs on the road, I think they do slow them down. I think they slow them down. It's going to be clear. It's going to be a little chilly. It's clouding up a little bit. It's going to be a little chilly, a little damp. And I think that field's going to be a little moist. It plays into the field of the 49ers. And this is going to be a tough game. I think that the 49ers beating the Saints will be easier. I would say that the Giants beating the Packers will be, I think, easier than the 49ers beating the Saints. I think the 49ers can beat beat the Saints today.
We talked about it last week. I had the Saints going to the NFC title game, and then throughout the course of this week, I started thinking some more. And I look at the Saints indoors, and I look at the Saints when they're outside. They're a totally different team outside the dome. And to me, the 49ers, first playoff game in a long, long time, a defense that plays very well, a New Orleans defense that is not very good. To me, I think the 49ers win today.
But the 49ers, okay, but the 49ers are not a good red zone team. They don't score enough points when they get the red zone.
Sure.
And the Saints score touchdowns in the red zone. So can Alex Smith and can they score points when they get to the red zone? And can they keep the Saints off the field? And to do that, you got to have a lot of Frank Gore, a lot of play action, and eat up a lot of clock.
But they can do it. They can do it. And New Orleans is a totally different team. They're not on that fast track in the dome. They're a totally different team outside. They are a totally different team. And just like Tebow and with Denver, I look at Alex Smith the same way in some respect. I say to me, in order for the 49ers to win, Alex Smith is going to have to make some plays. He's going to have to make some plays because the Saints are going to score. They're going to score some points. But the key is, can their defense stop the 49ers? Can the defense stop the 49ers' run game? And if the 49ers' run game is going, you got the play action to deal with.
Exactly.
It could be a problem. It could be a problem.
Well, I mean, but you got look, it can what can be a problem. Tim Tebow can be a problem too, but I will say this. I mean, this is a Saints team that I think clearly recognizes too. When they look to the other matchup, you know, the Giants, that's the Giants and Green Bay. I mean, if you're the Saints or you look at this and say, focus, play yourself, play your game, and you will not be beat. And you really do get to go into an NFC Championship game against a team that really worked to get there. So I think this is a big game. I look at the Saints saying, if I'm the Saints, they're fighting a much lesser opponent, per se, than the other two teams in the NFC. And the 49ers, this is all new to them. This is not so new, to the Saints organization. I like the Saints here big time.
In a row?
No, I think this is where this I'll say, you know, I think again say, and I'll say 10 to 14 points. I think this will not be close. I think the Saints will come in and take care of business. Go ahead, Willie.
I disagree.
I disagree. I think it'll be easier for the Giants to beat. The Giants to beat the Packers at home, the way the Packers defense plays, than it will for the Saints to beat the 49ers. Defense is going to show up, Jeremy, in this playoffs. And I say it because the 49ers defense is playing so well, and because it's going to be harder for the Saints to move the ball up and down the field on the grass, I think it's going to be harder for the Saints to score and move the ball against the 49ers than it will be for the Giants playing in Green Bay.
I mean, I kind of disagree with you on that one, because I actually – we'll get to the Giants and Packers game. I actually think the Packers are going to win that game very easily. But in looking at this 49er game, 49er and the Saints, I mean, the Saints will not – first of all, if the Saints win, it will not be a blowout. This is going to be a close – football game. This is going to be a very close football game. But to me, the Saints scare me being outside. They scare me not being on that fast track. They scare me because this is a team that lost to Tampa Bay on the road. This is a team that lost to the St. Louis Rams on the road in Grand.
Well, that was indoors, though. That wasn't outside.
That was indoors. That was indoors. I agree. But you look at that. You look at that, and that says to me this is not a team that – this is a totally different team on the road. You're not going to see 45 points here today.
And when they lost that game against Tampa Bay, they had a chance to win the game late in the game, and Brees did not complete the pass against like you said, Tampa Bay and St. Louis, who teams weren't that good. So they're playing a whole different animal this week. When they play the 49ers, they're playing a whole different animal. And if they let, and if they get after Brees, and if the referees, it's going to come down to this too, guys. If the referees let these guys play and don't call and let them hit the quarterback in the mouth and don't call tick-tacky fouls, then it's going to be a different game. Because I'm going to tell you, the Giants and the 49ers are going to try to hit the quarterbacks in the mouth, and that's football. So it comes down to if they let the teams play football, then we'll see a different football game.
And we'll see what happens. And, Willie, I'll leave you with this stat with the Saints and 49ers game. The Saints are they average 26 points per game outside, and inside they average 39 points per game. So that's a 13-point difference. And that's a lot of points. That's a big differential in terms of football. That's a big point differential.
Well, I still think they score 26, 27 points, they should win the game.
If they score that many points, they should win the game, but I don't think they'll score that many points. I don't think they score that
many
points.
I don't either.
I don't think they will. But obviously, if this game was in the Dome, obviously this would be a Saints game hands down.
Well, I got the Saints and the Patriots making it to the Super Bowl, though. So, I mean, I think it's going to be a tough game for the Saints, but I do have them making it to the Super Bowl against the Patriots.
So, ultimately, you believe that the Saints will win today?
I'm not saying that right now. I'm saying I hope they win, but I believe they win? I think it's going to be a tough task. I think the Giants have a better chance of winning, and the Saints have a better chance of winning. That's what I'm saying.
We'll see what happens. We're talking to 11-time Pro Bowler and 2012 Hall of Fame finalist Willie Rofe. And Willie, another game. We'll get to the Giants and Packers, but we have the Texans who head to Baltimore to face the Ravens. The Ravens are a team who play well at home. They're undefeated at home. Both of these teams play defense. They play defense very well. But I can't see T.J. Yates winning another playoff game, and I can't see him going into Baltimore to beat the Ravens. How do you see this one playing out?
I see a lot of Ray Rice, and I see a lot of play action, and I see Baltimore winning. I do like Houston's defense. The only way T.J. Yates and them win is if T.J. Yates can pass the ball. We know that they have some insufficiencies in the passing game. Ray Lewis does not move as well in the passing game. You have to have him playing in space and not letting him run it downhill. So the only way Houston can win this game is if we see them. They're not going to be able to run the ball consistently. I think they can run it a little bit because they do have a real good running back and they have a good scheme. But they're going to have to throw the ball to keep the Baltimore off balance. And when Baltimore's gotten beat, teams have thrown the ball on them. So I don't think they'll have enough to beat them, but if they do want to win the game, they will have to throw the ball.
And I agree with you. I can't see T.J. Yates beating the Baltimore Ravens. I can't see him doing it. The only way I can see it happening if Arian Foster has a good day. If he has a good day, they definitely have a shot. And if that defense, like they did last week, can force some turnovers and score on defense like they did last week. If they can do those things, they have a shot. I mean, Joe Flacco can't turn the ball over. Joe Flacco has had his moments good and had his moments bad.
That's why you got to give it to Ray Rice. I'm not gonna put the game in Flacco's hands. Ray Rice needs to be 60% of offense, catching screens, catching the ball, running the ball. It's got to be about Ray Rice for them to win. I'm not gonna put it in Flacco's hands. Maybe a couple passes, maybe over the top later, but I'm gonna put the game in Ray Rice's hands, not Flacco's.
And I think that's a good point. I think that's probably what the Ravens should do. But to me, again, it comes down to T.J. Yates. If they had Matt Schaub, and granted they had Matt Schaub earlier in the year and they still lost to the Ravens, but if they had Matt Schaub, obviously I would give them a legitimate shot here. But I can't see T.J. Yates beating the Baltimore Ravens. I can't see it happening. I don't think it's really. I mean, they have a shot because they play defense and they do run the ball, but the Ravens play defense, and so we'll see what happens here. But I agree with you, Willie. I cannot see the Texans winning this game. And the big one, Packers, Giants. I mean, we're hearing all this Giants talk, all this talk of 2007 where the Giants were the sixth seed and went through and got into the Super Bowl. And last week the Giants were impressive. They dominated Matt Ryan and the Falcons 24-2. The Giants are a confident bunch. Jason Pierre-Paul guaranteeing victory. And the last time these two teams played, the Packers won at the buzzer, so it was a very, very tough game.
Well, with the way that D-line's playing, with Hugh Meyer, the way those guys are playing, I mean, if they can put pressure on the quarterback, and we've seen when they played Kansas City and they put pressure on the quarterback, it's going to be a different game. Now, like you said, I think the Giants front four can put pressure on the quarterback.
They can. I totally agree with that. But to me, I look at this game and I see the Giants doing some talking here and Pierre-Paul guaranteeing victory and things of that nature and all this talk of 2007, so on and so forth. To me, this Packer team, you look at it the past few weeks, I mean, they lost to the Kansas City Chiefs, but who knows, maybe they were distracted with all the undefeated talk and so on and so forth, and they were a little banged up as well. But you look at this Packers team and you look at Aaron Rodgers, who's had a great, great year. They're going to score a lot of points. They scored a lot of points.
Do you think the death of the coordinator's son will help them or will that hurt them? I mean, they had a big funeral this week. I mean, so you know, some grieving. They're going through a grieving process. The team. Do you think that helps or hinders the team?
I don't think it's going to have an effect. I don't think it's going to have an effect at all. I really don't think it'll have an effect. They're at Lambeau. They're a great team at Lambeau Field. So, to me, I mean, all this talk of the Giants, all this talk, and yes, they're playing some good football, but Matt Ryan and Atlanta Falcons are not Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. They're just not that. Matt Ryan and them, that's just not that. So, to me, I like the Packers. I like the Packers to win big. I really do. I like the Packers to win big in this football game. And to me, you talk about the Packers' defense, and yes, it hasn't been very good this year, but there are some players on that defense. Clay Matthews, Charles Woodson, Tremont Williams. They have some players on the defensive side of the ball.
Tremont Williams from Louisiana Tech University. But I will say this. I say this game is closer than you think it is. I don't think it's a blowout. I think this game is close again. And like I said, I think the Saints are going to have a tougher time beating San Francisco than the Giants have a tougher time beating the Packers. Because that defense will give it up too now.
Well,
they will.
They have,
but I don't think they will this time around. I think it's a really good game.
Well, I mean, I have to say I'm awestruck that you would think. I have a lot of respect for the Giants. I mean, I certainly think that they are certainly starting to click. But this is a Packers team. I think they have made small work of the entire NFL this year. It's like almost as if they are in a whole other league to themselves. And the 49ers, yeah, they have a very impressive defense, and they're you know, their record speaks for itself. But I mean, the Saints versus the 49ers, this is not the 80s where the Niners reigned and the Saints were horrible. It's the reverse. I mean, this is the Saints team. Their defense is it's not that bad, and B, their offense is, I mean, electric. Next to the Packers, they are the offense of the NFL.
Yeah, so basically it's a role reversal. In the 80s and the 90s when I was playing for the Saints, it was the West Coast offense and finesse. They couldn't out-physical us, the 49ers, but they could out-finesse us. So it's reversed. The Saints are what the 49ers were to the NFL in the 80s and the early 90s, and the 49ers are what the Saints used to be. Old school football, smash you in the mouth, just run the ball, give you some play action, and for 4 yards in a cloud of dust, if you want to compare them offensively to each other. So it's a role reversal, basically, what it is between the teams. But the 49ers are going to play physical, and the Saints are more finesse. So when it comes down to a physical matchup, the 49ers, if it turns down to a dogfight, are the tougher team physically than the New Orleans Saints are. The Saints are a finesse, score fast offense, and they're going to have to play like that. Can they go to the 49ers and play that type of football today? I don't know if they can play that type of football today. They're a finesse team. The 49ers want to hit you in the mouth. It's a different – so it's a role reversal than it used to be.
And I heard a lot of people say this, talking about this game and talking about the NFC games this weekend. It's going to put a lot of things that we talk about to the test. Defenses win championships. You got the Giants and you got the 49ers, who got two teams with very good defenses, and you got the Saints and the Packers, two teams with two very good offenses. So does defense truly win championships? Or does good quarterback and offense, does that win championships? I mean, that's going to be put to the test this weekend with these two football games.
And the refs are going to play a part in this, too. When the refs let them play old school football? Because a couple teams want to play. I'm going to tell you what Harbaugh wants to do. He wants to hit them in the mouth. So are they going to let the teams get physical and play ball this week? That's left to be seen, too. How the refs will impact these games. The refs will be a big part of what happens this week, too.
And we'll see.
Green Bay wins. I think it's harder for the Saints to win.
I think Green Bay wins big. And I think the 49ers. I think they win big. You'll see. The Giants are doing a little too much talking for me, for my taste. I mean, it's just they're too confident for me.
What if they haven't been cocky? They were real cocky when Strahan was there. You think it's going to – they got that – you got a lot of players doing more rings on the Giants. That's the difference. No, that's another thing we're counting now. This Giant team has playoff experience. This Giant team has won the Super Bowl. A lot of those players are still on the team. So this team is not short of confidence.
And the Packers, to me, and Jeremy made this point, to me they were head and shoulders above anybody else throughout the course of this year. And we might have slept on them because, hey, they lost to the Kansas City Chiefs. We might have slept on them because of the way their defense has played.
Detroit went in there and scored 40 on them with a backup quarterback.
I'll give you that, but that was a game to me that game didn't really mean anything to the Packers. And with a game that really didn't mean anything to them, their backup quarterback in the game, they still scored 45 points. But I just think the Packers are head and shoulders above anybody else in football. They are the best team in football right now, and to me, and I said before, coming into the playoffs, I thought the Saints might have been the best team in football, but to me, the Saints will not get an opportunity to get to the Packers. If they had an opportunity to get to the Packers, I think it could be a different story. And I think if the Saints had the Packers in the dome, it would be a totally different story. But to me, because of all those things, I think the Packers are the best team, and I think the Packers will win against the New York Giants. I think they will win big. And I'm actually hoping they win big because I'm tired of the Giants talking, too much talking. And as a Philadelphia Eagles fan, I got to put it out there, as a Philadelphia Eagles fan, we hate the Cowboys, but I also hate the Giants. And I think I hate the Giants more than I hate the Cowboys. But
well,
I think
the Philadelphia Eagles are taking care of their business this year. They would have been in the playoffs and had a chance to win the game, but they didn't take care of their business when they needed to early in this season.
Very true, very true. The Giants are where they're supposed to be because they played some good football down the stretch. Give them credit. But I think it ends against the Green Bay Packers. We shall see. And Willie, this past week, some New York Jets players come out, started doing some chirping about Mark Sanchez, calling him lazy, so on and so forth. And I want to read you a quote. This is from a Jets source, somebody in the Jets organization, and this is from the New York Daily News. If you have a chance to get a healthy 36-year-old Peyton Manning and you don't do it, then you're stupid. If I could get a healthy 36-year-old Peyton Manning, then hell yeah, I would trade Sanchez. I think that guy stole that quote from me. Whoever it was stole that quote from me. He stole that quote from me because I couldn't agree. I couldn't agree more.
This is the bottom line. Peyton Manning's not going to be healthy. Peyton Manning can't pass the physical right now. When is he? Well, they say his neck is fusing. When is he going to be healthy? That's the problem with this whole thing everybody's talking about. He's not healthy. He wasn't healthy last year the whole year. He wasn't healthy when he got the contract last year. So he's still not going to be healthy. So the bottom line of the question is, if he is healthy, and when he is healthy, when is this going to happen? So that's the problem with Peyton Manning right now. He can't pass a physical. He's not healthy. So you can't give him the contract, and you still have to keep Mark Sanchez until you figure out Peyton Manning is going to be healthy. And that's really a mystery to everybody. Is he going to get healthy? So right now, I think they draft Andrew Luck. I think they have to part ways with Peyton Manning with a $28 million bonus coming March. And with $7 million base, it's $35 million. He can't make that much money next year. We all know that. So I think what happens is either Peyton Manning is released if he doesn't restructure, and he goes on the open market in March. So he'll be up to the highest bidder. But the problem is he won't be able to pass anybody's physical when he is a free agent.
We'll see what happens. I mean, if by March, maybe he's healthy by March. I mean, and if he is healthy by March, I mean, the reality is you have to start thinking about it.
If he's not
healthy, then it's a moot point. It's a moot point. But if you're the New York Jets, I mean, if you have
But honestly, somebody's hating on Mark Sanchez because they say Mark Sanchez is the first one in the building and the last one to leave. Now, I know, see, this is the thing about the NFL. A lot of coaches and a lot of GM, and especially the owners, they get caught up in the guys that are coming in there and staying all day and are showing that leadership. Hey, you have some guys that are practiced. We call them Scout Team All-Americans. Jim Everett is last year. I mean, Jim Everett would run around on that field and look and play, go out there and look great in practice and get out of the game and play terrible sometimes, especially that last year. So I don't care, you know, some guys are great practice players, some guys are gamers. But you have to figure that out as it goes on. But Mark Sanchez did not play well last year, especially down the stretch. They have to adjust the quarterback position. That's the bottom line. And he has regressed some. I don't care if he's in the facility all day. That doesn't mean he's there doesn't mean you don't hold him accountable. He still has to be held accountable by everybody that's standards. And the problem with the NFL is some of these coaches do baby some guys and don't tell it like it is. They ain't going to baby everybody, but they're going to baby who they want to baby.
And Willie, You said about Sanchez. You said about some players are practice players and some players are gamers. Mark Sanchez obviously is neither. He's neither. He's not himself. I mean, it showed it that he's, according to some sources, he's neither. So go ahead, Jeremy.
Well, I mean, that's funny because, you know, Paul, you're a regular. That's what I was going to touch on it. And this is it's a big issue. And you bring up Peyton Manning and his salary and whether they're going to keep him or not. But I say this, and I mean this. I think if the Indianapolis Colts, number one, if they release him, that will be, to me, akin to Reggie White being a free agent. And then I will say this. The biggest problem that Mark Sanchez has is he went into an organization and he's being asked, Paul, to be way too much, way too soon. They are doing to Sanchez what happened to Alex Smith. If you really look at Alex Smith, now you're seeing a quarterback. People are saying, well, who is this guy? This isn't the same guy we've seen. Sanchez came into this organization, and they had great success right off the bat, and everyone thought that this was a guy who was going to be able to continue that kind of success, but this defense is not the same as it was when he had the success. And, yeah, the offense may have had some players, but this was not an offense that people made out to be. I think that the NFL – and Willie, you know this better than anybody. If they want you to be a bad player, you're a bad player.
Well, I mean,
make him a bad player. I question the offensive scheme, and honestly, Brian Schottenmeier is not going to be there next year. The offensive coordinator. Then they just hire a new coordinator, so they're going to have a new coordinator next year because they let Schottenmeier go. But what I'm saying is. Under the system he was running, when they did try to make him pass the ball, he was inaccurate throwing the ball, and he got worse, though, Jeremy. The bottom line is his efficiency as a quarterback got worse. So all the film study and everything else did not help him. You have to go out there and execute the system. It's not like he's Alex Smith where he had a different coordinator for the last 3 years. He had the same coordinator every year he was there. So he probably, if he's a good quarterback, he's supposed to eventually start having some input in what the offense is doing. He knows what they're running because they've been running the same system. Alex Smith had a different coordinator every damn year he's been in San Francisco.
Well, and I think that's a fair point.
Paul, I mean, I want to make this clear. I mean, I it's well known. I think Sanchez. I actually think that this is the one player that I think has a level of he to me is, and I'll use this carefully. He's a poor man's Tom Brady, and I certainly don't think he has that ability that Tom Brady has. I think he is a very fundamentally sound quarterback. I think that, like you said, the scheme they had him in was, number one, it was horrible. And number two, they just have not really – people have expected way too much of a guy who never really was the focal point of why the Jets were so great. It was their defense. This is a guy who was expected to just make sure they don't lose games. He had an awful year this year, in part to the fact that the Jets' offense was really not that good. They were an average offense at its best. And he is, to me – right now, he's a third-year quarterback who really, is not that skilled. He came out way too early from college, and this is the type of player you're going to get unless he had players around him, which he doesn't have.
Well, I mean, the reason he was successful was because they were able to run the ball and play defense. They were not able to run the ball this year. They didn't run the ball the way they were in past years. And that is the reason Mark Sanchez has stunk up the joint this year. I think the bottom line with Mark Sanchez, he's not a franchise quarterback. To me, he's nothing more than a game manager at this point, and I don't think he'll change from that. If you are expecting Mark Sanchez to win you games, then you have the wrong quarterback. You have the wrong quarterback. And I think that's bottom line. You have the wrong quarterback. And if he is a poor man's Tom Brady, he is a homeless, Tom Brady.
What you're saying, this all started when Thomas Jones left in. Thomas Jones had 14, had a great year for him, and they let him go when he had a great year because they got the other back. So you're right. When they were running the ball a lot more and they had play action and the offense was more conservative, but they were still moving the chains, then they were a better football team. So when they let Thomas Jones go, then that was the start of all the problems because the next year the other running back got hurt and then they relied too much on LaDainian Tomlinson, and LaDainian Tomlinson can't carry the load like he used to when he was younger.
And I think, and the bottom line is the Jets did not play the type of defense they played in years past. And they didn't run the ball the way they have in years past. I think they still could bring Mark Sanchez back, but I think they have to explore some things as well and see what's out there. And they have to definitely see what's out there. But to me, Mark Sanchez is what he is, and he's not a practice player, nor is he a gamer. He's just a nothing. And to me, he's not nothing. He's an NFL quarterback, but I don't think he's a championship-caliber quarterback. And if the Jets – and the Jets are a team that is kind of in win-now mode, and they've been that way the last few years. They had a team that's kind of win-now, and unfortunately they are not winning, and they did not win this year 8-8 and did not make the playoffs, and I think part of the blame has to go to Mark Sanchez, a career-high 26 turnovers.
What are they doing with Plaxico Burress after this year?
Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, they have some things.
But Santonio Holmes is making all the money. He didn't have a great year.
Santonio Holmes has to come back. He has to come back.
Yeah, he's guaranteed. Exactly.
He has to come back. They have an interesting offseason. An interesting offseason for the New York Jets. And speaking of a guy who's having an interesting offseason or who's going to have an interesting next couple months, you, Willie. I mean, you're a 2012 Hall of Fame finalist. You were named the finalist last Saturday. First off, talk about hearing your name as a finalist one more time.
Well, it's great to be back in the same situation. And, I've contacted the NFL, and they send you a letter, and I'll be on hold. And if I do get a chance to go up to the Super Bowl, my father will be coming from Arkansas. So, excited that, I got my itinerary here and contacted the people from the Hall of Fame committee and And I know my father would be real excited to get a chance to go up to the Super Bowl and stay up there for a couple of days, you know, if I get in.
Right. And we'll see what happens. I mean, I think you definitely have a good shot to get in, and we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Is there still some nervousness there? Or what's the feeling there?
It is some nervousness, and I need to go on over by Rochester so I make sure I'm dressed appropriately. If I do get in, I got to make sure I'm dressed appropriately if I walk out on that field. So there is nervousness. It's good nervousness, and it's an exciting time, and we got a few weeks to find out what happens. I mean, you know, the problem is, you know, the NFL Network takes care of that now, so, you know, we won't know till Saturday after the voting. That's done on Saturday afternoon, and like you said, I won't know anything till, you know, 3-4 o'clock Eastern time on Saturday.
And hypothetically speaking, if you do get in, do you have an outfit that you have in mind? Do you have anything in mind?
No, I gotta go get, and I'm gonna go get something to wear.
Okay, to
the game. To the game.
You have any exploring any type of colors at this point? You have any idea in terms of colors?
Well, I got to go with something similar to Saints colors, so it obviously had to be some type of tan or in black or, you know, something to go sort of with the colors of the team that I'm going to have.
Fair enough. And we shall see what happens. So, Willie, just so we're clear, you have the 49ers. No, I'm sorry, you have the Saints, you have the Packers, you have the Patriots, you have the Ravens this week.
I think I'm leaning more toward the 49ers.
So you're leaning towards the 49ers. So you're going to go against your beloved New Orleans Saints.
I'm not going against my beloved New Orleans Saints. I'm saying I think it's going to be tougher for them to win that game than Green Bay and the Giants.
We shall see what happens. I mean, it's going to be some good action. It's going to be some good football in this. To me, the wild card round and the divisional round are the two best weeks in the NFL. I mean, some good football there, and we shall see. We shall see what happens. Willie, as always, man, it's been a pleasure talking to you. We wish you nothing but the best of luck, and we'll talk about it again next week.
All right, you guys take it easy.
The great Willie Rofe, 11-time Pro Bowler. Willie Rofe is this close again to becoming a Hall of Famer. We shall see what happens. I think he gets in this time around. What do you think, Jeremy?
No, I mean, I think last year was a difficult class, and Willie's a Hall of Famer. So, I mean, it's certainly time for the – and as well as the fact that he was, you know, one of the first – he kind of revolutionized that guard position for the NFL. And you know, he I think, is certainly a very strong candidate.
Yeah, I mean, he was – you said guard, but he was one tackles. He was one of the greatest tackles in his era.
He revolutionized. And he was one of those. And you and I remember he was one of those very mobile offensive linemen, big, quick. Not, you know, breaking away from the slimmer. He was just a massive athlete. He was an athlete, not an offensive lineman, able to move. You know, able to play against these faster defensive linemen, and now you're seeing, you know, that he's the model, if you will, for what present day, you know, NFL linemen are supposed to look like.
Yes, I mean, the man's had a Hall of Fame career, and if he doesn't get in this time, he's going to get in at some point. It's just really a matter of time. It's just a matter of when. I mean, I think it's going to happen this year, but if it doesn't, it's just really a matter of when. He will get in at some point. He definitely will get in, but we'll see moving forward. And we're going to be joined shortly by actor Boo Boo Stewart, and Boo Boo Stewart is involved in the Breaking Dawn movie. I mean, the movie, it's on some crazy numbers. We're going to talk to Boo Boo about that particular movie and some of the things that he's doing, as he's also involved in music as well. So we're going to be talking to him. He's going to be joining us very shortly. And also, in the second hour, we're going to be joined by Jesse Holly of the Dallas Cowboys, Mr. Fourth and Long himself. Jesse Holly will be joining us in the 2 o'clock hour. So we got a nice, busy, jam-packed 2 o'clock hour for you. Second hour, go for it, starts now. You are listening to Go Forward on blogtalkradio.com. And we're back second hour. Again, Boo Boo Stewart will be joining us shortly. And also Jesse Holly of the Dallas Cowboys will be joining us. And we're going to be joined any moment now by Boo Boo Stewart from the Breaking Dawn movie. And he's going to be joining us just about now. Let's bring in now one of the stars of Breaking Dawn, actor Boo Boo Stewart. Boo Boo, how are you, sir?
I'm doing very good. Very good. You?
I'm doing great, doing great. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
And Boo Boo, you got to be on cloud nine right now. Breaking Dawn's doing some crazy numbers in the theaters right now. I mean, what has this Twilight series meant to your acting career?
It's opened up a lot of doors. It's been so amazing. I've been able to travel all around the world, meet a lot of really awesome people, and yeah, it's just been an amazing experience.
And it has to be. And right now, on Breaking Dawn, you play Seth Clearwater. I mean, you're playing a werewolf. So how is it? How much fun is it playing a werewolf?
It's pretty awesome. It's pretty cool. You know, I wish I could actually do that in real life, transform. But to make it look really awesome in the movie by creating really, like, real-looking wolves. And, yeah, it's really neat to see how you would look if you're an animal, I guess.
And you look at it, when you first signed up for this Twilight series, did you think it would do the type of numbers that it's doing?
You know, luckily when I got into it, it was already, like, New Moon was coming out, so it was already pretty popular. But,
okay.
Like, seeing that and then being a part of it is pretty, like, surreal.
And you know, you have that going on. You have some other things going on. You're going to play a different role in 2012 in a movie titled White Frog. I mean, you're going to be playing Nick Young, and Nick Young is a teenager with Asperger's disease, which is a form of autism. You talked about how difficult that role was for you. Talk about this movie and talk about the role of Nick Young.
White Frog is it's a movie about a family that is suffering through a tragic accident, and my character, Nick Young, has to bring everyone back together. So, it was really amazing to be able to play a character that has Asperger's. I've definitely learned a lot, had to do a lot of research. It's definitely the hardest role I think I've ever tackled.
And doing this type of role, how much is that going to help you down the line?
Oh, immensely, definitely. And, you know, just like pushing your acting ability, I think, is a really cool thing to do. And it's fun. That's like what acting's all about. And,
right.
Yeah, and my sister and I we're actually going in the recording studio tomorrow, so we're still working on our album, and a lot of people don't know I actually started in music first, so being able to do these movies and everything is open, more goes up for our music also.
And you talked about the music, and you're going into the studios with your sister, and you signed with Walt Disney Records. I mean, you do it all. You do the modeling, you do the stunts, you beat people up with your karate, and we're going to get to the karate in a second here. But how would you describe your music?
Our music is kind of like a, not too rock, but kind of like a pop alternative rock sound.
Okay.
Yeah.
And who's the inspiration, or is there an inspiration?
You know, well, for me, like, my favorite band is Boston, but we don't play music like that, unfortunately.
Not yet.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, my sister really loves Katy Perry and all those bands, and I think they're great, too, so definitely groups like that.
We're talking to actor Boo Boo Stewart, one of the stars of Breaking Dawn, and Boo Boo. We talked about the music. We talked about the acting. And you're a stuntman as well. You did some work in Beowulf. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's right. That was a while ago. Yeah, I actually was one of the stunt doubles for Beowulf. Because when he fights this monster called Grendel, the monster's supposed to be extremely big, and they used me so they could have, like, a taller man, and I could, I was, like, Beowulf, like, the smaller size as if he was fighting a huge monster, you know. So it was pretty cool. I got to do some really fun stunts. You know, doing it all is really fun.
Right. And where did that come from? Where's the inspiration for the stunts? I know I saw somewhere about your father was in it.
Yeah, exactly. He was, and he still is. So that's how I started. And, yeah, I mean, Being able to do them both would be awesome.
And like you said, we talked about the acting. You do the stunts. And we got to get to you beating people up as you won the Junior Martial Arts Championship in 2002 and 2003. So basically, don't mess with Boo Boo. Talk about your martial arts skills.
I started in Hawaiian Kempo. I did other styles like Shotokan, extreme martial arts, a little bit of sport jiu-jitsu. And earlier on, I did a style of kung fu called Futsal Kendo. And I decided to start over. So I'm just starting over now. I just had my first test. And I'm hopefully going to be starting Wing Chun. It's another style of kung fu.
Okay. And the karate, I mean, it's how tough is that? I mean, is it like a labor of love?
I really love it, and I'm getting back into it, which is really nice. I think it's really neat to be able to defend yourself, and just to know, like, it's such good discipline.
Right.
Yeah.
And Boo Boo, you act, you sing, you do stunts, you beat people up, and you also dance. I mean, goodness, you do it all. And you did some work in Eminem's music video, Lose Yourself. How great of an experience was that for you?
That was such a long time ago. It was really fun. I danced for a really long time, and, it was cool while I did it. You know, I had a really good time dancing, and Eminem actually was really cool. It was very nice.
And is there, I mean, like, you're doing all this different stuff. Is there, like, a personal favorite, the karate? Is it the dancing? Is it the music? What is your passion, or is it all of it?
If I had to choose one, I would choose acting.
Okay.
Yeah.
And why acting?
Well, I think when you act, you can, like, and you can always play a role that's a singer. You can play a role that's a dancer, you know, a martial artist. So I think when you act, you can, like, do it all.
Okay. And Boo-Boo, I mean, I usually don't call other men Boo-Boo. So where did the nickname come from?
It's just a nickname of my parents gave me when I was a baby, and it just always kind of stuck with me. My friends started calling me Boo-Boo, and it's like, I don't know, I think at first people were like, what? And then I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool, so.
And it's 2012 now. 2011 is behind us. What is the goals for Boo-Boo Stewart in 2012?
Just continue to do what I'm doing. I'm really having a good time doing everything. Hopefully I'll have some really good news for you guys in about a month or so. So I'm just continuing on with the acting, the music, and everything.
Okay, and Boo-Boo, where can fans find out about all these great things, the acting, the music, the dance, the karate, all of it? Where can fans connect with Boo-Boo Stewart?
You can follow my sister and I on Twitter at RealBooBooFival, and you can follow me on Facebook, and that is The Real Boo-Boo Stewart.
And who is the most talented Stewart? I mean, you got your sisters, we got you. Who's the most talented? We got your father as well.
Ooh, my dog, Pookie.
So the dog's the most talented.
The dog is, definitely.
Oh, so the dog can sing and do all those other things that you can do.
She's the happiest. She's always happy, no matter what.
Boo-Boo, it was a pleasure talking to you, sir. We wish you nothing but the best of luck. You got a lot of great things going on right now. And the music, where can we find out about the music?
Definitely on that, Twitter and Facebook also. And actually on iTunes. We have two songs on iTunes right now. Just type in Boo-Boo and Fievel, or Boo-Boo and Fievel. And hopefully in a few weeks we'll have some more songs.
Okay. And keep pushing out the music. Keep pushing out the movies. And we expect big things for Boo-Boo Stewart in 2012.
Cool. Thank you, man.
Thank you. Appreciate you. Boo-Boo Stewart, actor, one of the stars of Breaking Dawn, and it was a pleasure talking to Boo-Boo Stewart, and we wish him nothing but the best of luck. He does it all. I mean, he really does it all. I mean, he's a very talented young man, and we're expecting big things from him, and Breaking Dawn movies, doing some big numbers, and he's a part of it. And he's got some music coming out, and so we're looking forward to that and looking forward to all the good things that Boo-Boo Stewart has to offer in 2012. And switching gears now, moving to the NBA, and moving more specifically to the Miami Heat and Chris Bosh. Chris Bosh had some interesting comments that will be appear in GQ, I believe, this month about who should take the last shot in a basketball game. And, you know, it's been talk about it, who should take the last shot. Should it be Bron, LeBron James? Should it be Dwayne Wade? And you're hearing it between those two guys. I've always felt that it should be Dwayne Wade. And Chris Bosh actually agrees with me and agrees with a lot of other people who feel that way. Chris Bosh was asked, hypothetically, let's say the game was tied, 10 seconds left, you had 30, LeBron had 30, Wade had 30. You got the same amount of rebounds, same amount of assists, having the same game. Who takes a shot at the end to either win or lose the game? Chris Bosh answered immediately, Dwayne, which is Dwayne Wade. And when asked why, he said because of his success in the past, given what he's done. He's a champ. He's an MVP. He's hit a bunch of last-second shots. That's the time you have to put pride aside a little bit and do what's best for the team. He's the quickest, and he's going to get a shot off. He relishes those moments. And those were the words of Chris Bosh. Chris Bosh believes that in a pressure situation, last-second shot, that the ball should go to Dwayne Wade. And to me, while I agree with Chris Bosh, that is probably something you should not say. You probably should not say it, even if it's the truth, because reality is, it is the truth. But that is probably something you should not have said. You should not have said that.
Why are you saying
that?
Why?
For the simple fact is, first of all, I think if you're going to say anybody, I think you should say yourself. And if you're not going to say yourself, and I heard Steve Smith say, if you're not going to say yourself, you should say everybody. You should say whoever's open. And I think that's the way he should have answered that question. He answered. I don't think you answered that question. You don't answer that question that way.
Why? What is so wrong, Paul? What is so wrong for him to come out there and to say, you know what? So you're saying what he said is fundamentally wrong, that their best player is not Dwayne Wade? I mean, in the heat of the last second of a big game, Dwayne Wade, what he said, is not a championship player, which he is, and he hasn't done it before, which he has, that he's not the quickest off the ball, and he hasn't taken the big second shot, which none of them have, well, except LeBron, who missed them. I mean, LeBron was there and got embarrassed when he went to the finals. But Dwayne Wade won the final. Like, I have to say, Paul, there's nothing wrong with a great NBA player saying, like James Worthy. So you mean tell me if James Worthy said, when asked who should take the last second shot, if he said it shouldn't be Magic Johnson, that's wrong of James Worthy?
He should say whoever's open. And I'm taking that from Steve Smith, and I agree with him on that one. I think he should say who's open. He should say whoever's open. And if he's not going to say whoever's open, he should say himself. He's a star in this league. Why can't he say himself? He's a proven scorer in this league. Why can't he say himself? I don't think you answer it. I don't think you answer that question.
What is the difference between saying who's ever open and when you look at what he said, what did he say that is so wrong? He just simply said the bottom line is he believes that a guy like Dwayne Wade is battle-tested.
He said, let's be clear about something. He did say the truth. The truth is Dwayne Wade probably should be taking the last second shot for the Miami Heat. That is true. That part is true. But sometimes you just can't say all the truth. You can't say the truth all the time. And that was a time where you probably just say whoever's open. That is a time you just say whoever's open. And especially with the flack that LeBron has taken, you know, from last year's finals. And some of the flack he took this week where he was bricking free throws left and right against the Clippers, and so on and so forth, you probably do not make those type of comments. And granted, this interview took place before LeBron missed all those free throws against the Clippers. But the thing is, you got to be smarter than that. And all the pressure that LeBron that faces LeBron, all the things that have been said about LeBron, I think at that point you don't cause any type of controversy. And I'm not saying that was his intent. And I believe maybe his intent was to tell the truth. But the reality is you have to be smart. You have to be smarter than that. And I think in being smart, you just say whoever's open. Or you say yourself.
Well, I think what he said, Paul, again, I think you're looking at what he said and you're worrying too much about the fact that what he said is not wrong. I mean, all the man said was basically that Dwayne Wade should – he really anoints Dwayne Wade, though, the fundamental leader of the team, which, by the way, LeBron James has already done. LeBron James in the offseason and heading into this season really did say that, you know, he's going to let Dwayne Wade do the talking this year, that he's not going to make the mistake that he made. Did he not go on air and make those comments? Did he not say that he's going to let Dwayne Wade handle the media and he's going to just play his game? He's not going to get caught up in the manner in which he did last year?
Well, I mean, they all got caught up. I believe he did get caught up in terms of what happened last year. He said he played angry. He said he played angry last year, and he's not going to do that this year. To me, I think the bottom line is this. In a late-game situation, I agree with Chris Bosh that Dwayne Wade should have the ball. I don't think anybody would argue that what Chris Bosh said was the truth. But I think what my argument and my position in here is this. You don't say it in public. You don't say it out loud. You don't say it out loud. Maybe that's something that is whispered around. But you don't say that out loud. Say that out loud. You just don't.
Why?
You just don't because of the amount of pressure that's already on LeBron, because of all the talk about LeBron and late-game situations, his failures in the fourth quarter of the NBA and last year's NBA Finals. You don't say it. That is something you just don't say. And I think when it comes to that question, I think you answered that question very simply and basically say to me, either yourself or whoever's open or whoever has the best shot, whoever has the best look at the basket. That to me is what you say. And I think he made a mistake. I think he made a mistake in that. And I think we all know he made the mistake because we're talking about it now. And it's causing a little controversy because we're talking about it. So I think he made a mistake there. I definitely think he made a mistake there, even though it is the truth. And Dwayne Wade has proven throughout the course of the season how true it is. As he hit, a couple weeks back, he had some back-to-back. He had some buzzer beaters. Or not buzzer beaters, but more so game winners. And he was doing his thing and has done his thing in those late-game situations. I understand what you're saying. It is the truth. The reality is it is the truth, but it's just something you don't say. I don't think
I can't.
You don't say it out loud.
So you're saying that I'm going to go back to the Lakers. I think the Lakers have had, theoretically, you know, in the glory days with Kareem and Worthy and Magic, probably the most mirrored image of this organization with three superstars and, you know, theoretically three different positions. You know, Chris Bosh isn't a true center, but nowhere near Kareem. But you mean tell me if they asked Worthy and Worthy said Magic, which is the right answer? I mean, the right answer in that was if you really look
well,
at
Well, I mean, James Worthy put up a lot of points and hit some pressure shots throughout his career. So I don't know what the right answer. I think the right answer is whoever's open.
Come on, Paul. It's not. I mean,
the right answer there is whoever's open.
When you're
in this situation, because but the thing is,
where was Bosh last year? Then in the finals, Paul. There are many.
He wasn't awful in the finals. He wasn't awful in the finals, and I think the reality is the finals, to me, if you're going to blame it on anybody, it should be LeBron James and his fourth quarter failures. I mean, he was a totally different player in the finals in comparison to the way he played throughout the course of those playoffs, throughout the first, you know, in comparison to the first round, the second round, and the conference finals where he made some big plays in the fourth quarter. He came up absolutely positively small in the fourth quarters of the NBA Finals. He came up small, minuscule. He came up small. And so, to me, microscopic, he came up. I mean, it just he did not play well in those NBA Finals.
I'm not going to disagree with you, but by the same token, I'm really not going to let you sit around and say, by any stretch of the imagination, but Bosh did not play well. Bosh was silent. He was silent in the entire NBA Finals. And especially
Bosh was decent in the NBA Finals. He was decent in the NBA Finals. You look at the Miami Heat, it came to LeBron James faltering in the fourth quarter. If LeBron James played like he did during the Eastern Conference playoffs, the Miami Heat would be NBA champions this year. Last year, I should say. They would be defending champions going into this year if LeBron James played the way he was supposed to play. If he played like the way he was supposed to play, the Miami Heat would be NBA champions, would be defending NBA champions this year. LeBron James came up small. He came up small. And because of that, that is Exhibit A on why, if you're Chris Bosh, whether it's true or not, which I think it is, his comments are true. His comments are very much true. But it's just probably something you just don't say. It's something you just don't say. And I think, it's true, but you just don't say it. A lot of things are true, but we just should not say it. A lot of things are true, but doesn't mean we should
Paul.
Say it.
Okay.
Does not mean we should say it.
All right.
I guess we'll agree.
But again, you take one of your own questions and twist it like a pretzel, and it doesn't even sound the same anymore. I have to say, with all due respect, that you asked this, the question if he asked was right or wrong, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with an athlete saying that there is a better answer than me, that, or a person that's open. So you're saying that, Paul, a player like Wade cannot hit a jumper with somebody in his face?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying is some things are not, you don't say in public. Some things you whisper. That's something that should be whispered. That's not something that should be said out loud. That's something that probably should be whispered or kept to yourself. That's just what I said. That's how I feel about it. That's something that probably should have been whispered. But obviously we'll have to agree to disagree on this one. But I mean, what he said is true. It is true. Dwayne Wade should be the guy taking the shot in those pressure situations or last second situations. But it's probably something that should not have been said. That's all. And there's another team in the Eastern Conference playing some good basketball, and that is the Philadelphia 76ers. The Philadelphia 76ers, 8-3, on top of the Atlantic Division after 11 games. A balanced attack. I mean, you look at this roster. They have 7 guys who average double figures. Another guy is averaging 9.1. So this is a balanced attack. This is a balanced attack in Philadelphia. Lou Williams is leading the way with 15 points per game, but they're playing defense the way Doug Collins coaches defense. He's obviously loving the way this team is playing, the way they're playing defense. They play defense, and you can get points from a bunch of different guys. It's a balanced attack. And I've heard some comparisons to 2004 Pistons, and that ball club that was a balanced team. We had Bill Ups and Rip Hamilton and Rasheed Wallace, Ben Wallace, Tayshaun Prince, and those boys. They had a balanced attack. But the Pistons had a very balanced attack, and it was a team that did not have superstars. That wasn't a team filled with superstars. That was the true notion of a team, that ball club. That was a team in the Sixers are playing like that. Now, are the Sixers as talented as those 2004 Pistons? I don't think so. But we do have to remember those 2004 Pistons did not become the 2004 Pistons before the Rasheed Wallace trade. And the moment that the Pistons brought in Rasheed Wallace, they became a totally different team. They became a totally different team and a better team when Rasheed Wallace came on in. So you look at that Pistons ball club. You look at them. And you look at this 2011-2012 Sixers team. There are some similarities, but I don't think the Sixers are as talented as that Pistons team was. I don't think they are. And by the way, Rasheed Wallace has been talking about, there's been some reports that Rasheed Wallace has been talking about a comeback. He has been talking about a comeback. He retired two seasons ago, right after the finals, right after the Celtics lost to the Lakers in the finals, he retired. And there has been talk that he may make a comeback. Maybe the Sixers looking to Rasheed Wallace, and they can have that same magic that the Pistons had back in 2004. Maybe, just maybe. But you look at the Sixers team, and some of the teams they've had beaten are not very good teams. They're taking advantage of this early part of the schedule. I mean, some of their losses, you look at it, they lost to the Blazers, a very good team, the Jazz, a team that plays very well at home. I believe they only lost once at home, and that was a couple days ago to the Lakers. And then they lost to the Knicks, a team that's playing some good basketball as well. But you're going to find out a lot about this Sixer ball club probably next week, where you have the Nuggets coming to town on Wednesday, a decent ball club. You have the Hawks coming to, town. Then you travel to Miami. So that three-game stretch, you should find out a lot about the Sixers and how good this team really is. And then after that, after Miami, they have Washington, New Jersey, Charlotte, and Detroit. They should be able to win those four games. They should be able to win those four games. And so you're looking at a team that could be at least, what, they're 8-3 now, they could be at least 13-14-5. And then you look at them after they play Detroit on the 28th of January, they have Orlando, Chicago, Miami, Atlanta, the Lakers, San Antonio, and the Clippers. So from January 30th to February 10th, that next couple, those couple weeks, we should be able to find out a lot about the Philadelphia 76ers and how good they really are. We shall see how good they really are during from January 30th to February 10th. That should give us an idea of what the Sixers really are and who they really are. Are they a team? Are they a contender in the Eastern Conference? Or are they a fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth seed? Are the Wolves, we shall see. And I think, again, from January 30th, where you have the Magic, where they play the Magic, the Bulls, the Heat, the Hawks, the Lakers, the Spurs, and the Clippers, that should tell you a lot about the Philadelphia 76ers. Are they for real? Are they for real?
Let me ask you this. I mean, you're asking the question. So, in your opinion, then, you know, are they for real?
I don't know. I don't know at this point. I mean, they're playing some. They have a balanced attack. They play very good defense. And they've been playing very well at home. I mean, playing good defense and playing well at home are recipes for success. And they've done that throughout the course of this season. But again, you look at some of their victories. Beating the Pistons, not a very good team. Beating a team like the Suns, not a very good team. Beating a team like Golden State, a team that's just okay. Not a great team, obviously. Beating the Hornets, the Pacers, that was a good victory, but Danny Granger did not play, but that was an impressive victory. Beating the Kings, and beating the Wizards last night. I mean, none of those names or teams really, really jump out at you. None of them really jump out at you. So I look at it, and I say, are the Sixers for real? I don't know. I think the question, I think it's, I don't know. But I'll tell you what, I'll tell you this, though. January 30th to February 10th, I'll answer your question then. And I think we'll all have a better idea what they are and who they are around that time. You would agree with that?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think this is a young enough team. I was just curious to get your take. I mean, I think it's a young enough team that you certainly there is no harm in waiting. I will say what you see so far from this team, I think they should do as well as they did last year. I think they have – one of the things they certainly, I think, have shown me is there's some talent on this team if they can stay healthy. And I think, you know, that's a big if because they certainly, you know, have – there are some – the question marks is can they stay healthy or can – you know, Grant, I guess, is the real player. Can he stay healthy for a full season? If so, I mean, they're a force. I don't think anyone can sit there and say that they don't have – you know, the talent to squeak, if you will, into the playoffs.
Oh, they'll definitely make the playoffs. The question is, are they going to be a team that gets home court advantage in the playoffs, a four seed, or are they a team that's going to be kind of on the bottom end of the Eastern Conference? But again, they're off to a great start, and they have benefited from an easy schedule, a beneficial schedule at this point. But, I mean, give these guys credit. These guys are playing some good basketball. Spencer Hall's is averaging close to a double-double. He's giving them some good basketball. Lou Williams giving them some basketball, good basketball off the bench. Drew Holiday and all those guys. Thaddeus Young playing well off the bench. Evan Turner, the youngster, playing well off the bench. So they're getting some good contributions off their bench. It's a balanced attack. It is a balanced attack with this 76er ball club. A lot of balance there. A lot of balance with this ball club. So we'll see. We'll see. Are they for real? Get back to me sometime in February, and I'll have a better answer for you. I'll have a lot better answer for you. But they are off to a great start. I'll tell you that. They are off to a great start. But I'll have a better answer for you. I'll have a better answer for you sometime in February. I'll have a better answer for you. And switching gears now, and I hope that we can get an answer very soon about this, and hopefully we can get our answer, and hopefully the answer is yes. This past week, Floyd Mayweather Jr., who scheduled a fight May 5th, and we don't know who it's going to be against, but the fight is scheduled, and we'll see who it is against. And Floyd Mayweather was supposed to go to jail January 6th. The judge gave him a break, told him he has a report June 1st. So this past week, Floyd Mayweather called out Manny Pacquiao on Twitter, asked him to get the fight. Let's do the fight. Pacquiao at this point and his team, they haven't really given a true answer at this point. We don't even know if negotiations are going on. We don't really know a lot about this. But at this point, what we're getting so far from Bob Arum and Pacquiao's team is that, you know, we're not going to do this right now. It makes more sense to wait. And they're talking about one of their big issues is where this fight's going to take place. That is one of their big issues. The fight is going to take place in Las Vegas, but they want to have an opportunity to have the fight at a larger venue and at a temporary stadium that could hold possibly 45,000+ people. So they want a larger gate, and they want that opportunity. And they're saying, Team Pacquiao, that the stadium would not be available in time for May 5th. That's what they're saying. I mean, the MGM Grand, where Floyd Mayweather has reserved the date May 5th, holds about 17,000 people. And Team Pacquiao is saying they can make more money by having the fight at a bigger stadium or a bigger temporary stadium in Vegas, but the only problem is that it may take too long or may not be – the stadium could not or may not be ready for May 5th. I just – you know, we've been hearing about this story seems like forever. You know, will these guys finally get it on at some point? You know, will these two guys just get it on? And right now you're looking at it, at one point maybe you blame Mayweather. Now I think the blame has to go squarely on the backs of Bob Arum, Top Rank, and Manny Pacquiao at this point. If this fight doesn't happen May 5th, you got to blame those guys. Because Mayweather obviously wants to do it. He's called him out. And Floyd hasn't been calling Pacquiao out. He's calling him out now. So, will it happen? Will it happen? I can't answer that question. That's a $25,000 question. That's a $1 million question.
Will it happen?
But
here's the thing, Paul. You know as well as I do. I mean, May 5th for this fight is way too soon. I mean, it basically the boxers had to be – they had to be in training yesterday. I mean, and the
You're talking
promotion
from February.
Of a fight like this. We're in February 1, and so they have 4 months.
Well, we're in May. We're in January right now, January 14th. We're the middle of January, February, March, April, May. You got that's 3 months of training camp if they can get this thing negotiated.
A fight of this magnitude, that's the thing, Paul. If they get this negotiated, you're talking to Walter, it's February 13th, February 14th. They haven't negotiated anything. So if they get this negotiated.
Well, we don't know at this point,
Paul,
We don't know
at
this point.
They don't have it negotiated until February 1st. Let's keep it real, Paul. You know as well as I do. That if they had it negotiated, they'd had a press conference that they're fighting on May 5th. So
you got a lot of posturing going on. You got some negotiations going on. In public, that is. I mean, there is no negotiations. We don't know of any negotiations. We don't know if anything's going on in the back rooms. But at this point, from what we know, there's really no negotiating going on. But to me, if it doesn't happen then, if it doesn't happen May 5th, Floyd's going to do, 90 days in jail? So he's going to report June 1st. So that's July. That's August. Now to September. So that if it doesn't happen May 5th, 2012, it's pretty much out the window. So then when does it happen? If it doesn't happen May 5th, then when does it happen? Or does it ever happen? And does it have maybe you go early 2013, but I don't know. I mean, I'm getting the sense that if May 5th is not the date, it's not going to be in 2012. If it's not May 5th, it's not going to be in 2012. So we're going to have another year of talking about the fight that should happen and a fight that I would love to see. I heard Michael Wilbon say this. This is a fight that this is a sporting event that he would want to see more than anything else. And I'm close to agreeing with him on that. That is an event, and that would be a big-time event. That would shatter all pay-per-view numbers. That would shatter all types of records. That would be a fight for the ages. Will it ever happen? It's not looking good. It is not looking good. And who should we blame at this point? I think we have to blame Bob Arum, Top Rank, Manny Pacquiao, and everybody else who deals with Manny Pacquiao, negotiates, and works with Manny Pacquiao. I mean, this has to get done. Will it get done, Jeremy? Point blank.
No.
And I think I'm close to agreeing with you. I'm holding out hope, but maybe that's all it is, just hope. But, I mean, would you agree it would be one of the larger sporting events in 2012 if it does happen?
I think this would be the largest. I think it would be bigger than the Super Bowl.
I mean, it would be a big event. it would truly be a big event if it does happen. And you hope that it can happen. But I don't know. It's not looking good. It is just not looking good. And I think all the fans would be missing out on what could be a great event. The fans would be missing out. The fans are the ones who would be missing out on this great event. I mean, you're talking about 2 pound-for-pound best boxers in the sport getting it on. The 2 pound-for-pound best boxers in the sport getting it on. And unfortunately, because of egos, because of tests, not taking tests, and because of Floyd Mayweather's legal issues, on some level, maybe you can blame that. On some level, this fight may not happen, probably won't happen, and we may all miss out. And I heard Bernard Hopkins say this a few months back. He said that if it doesn't happen soon, the public will lose interest. The public won't even care if it does not happen soon. And then I'm starting to agree with him on that one. I think he has a point there. If it does not happen soon, the public may not even want to see it after a while. And that, you know, and that would be unfortunate. That would be very, very unfortunate. Hopefully it happens. Hopefully they can get these negotiations right, and hopefully it can happen. But the odds are truly, truly stacked against it. The odds are stacked against it. It may not happen, folks. We may not see Pacquiao Mayweather. We may not see it. And unfortunately, it'd be a sad, sad day if we don't. But I think we may not see it. We may not see it. But you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb here. I think we will see Pacquiao Mayweather May 5th. I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen. I think these guys are going to find a way to negotiate this thing, find a way to get this fight worked out. They're going to make it happen. They are going to make it happen. And if you don't believe me, I have a track record for making these type of predictions and being successful with them. Take a listen. Big Ben is not Big Ben, and I don't think he will be, and he has not been these past couple weeks. I think the Denver Broncos, not think, I believe, I know, actually, that the Denver Broncos will get this victory, pull off the upset, and win this playoff game. There you have it. There you have it. I have a track record, everybody. You're talking to Nostradamus here. I make predictions, big-time predictions. And my predictions turn out right. And so if you want to know what's going to happen this week in the National Football League, the Patriots will win, but it will be close. So if you're out there, you're thinking about betting, and I hope you don't. But if you do, you might want to take the Broncos. I believe the spread is about 13 points. It's going to be a close game. New Orleans Saints will lose to the San Francisco 49ers. Take that to the bank. Let's go to Sunday. You look at it. You look at what's going on. The Ravens will beat the Houston Texans. There's no way that the Texans can beat. There's no way the Texans can beat the Ravens. And the nightcapper on Sunday, the New York Giants will lose to the Green Bay Packers, and I think it will be a rout. But we'll see. We shall see. Let's bring in now Mr. Fourth and Long himself, the one, the only, Jesse Holly. Jesse, how are you, sir?
How you guys doing, man? I'm great. How's everybody doing?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us. And Jesse, tough way for you guys to end the season, losing to the Giants with the division on the line. Going into that game, did you guys feel good about your chances especially the way you guys played them earlier in the season?
Yeah, I mean, we felt really good about our chances. And we know that when we played them early on in the season, that we left some plays out there in the field. You know, we were up 12 points with 3 minutes left to go in the game. And early in the game, we missed a pick six. Also missed the connection between Miles and Tony. So you look at those things, you say, wow, if we can bring that same game we played them with at home up to New York and capitalize on those things that we didn't capitalize on before and play some solid defense, that we'll have a chance to win that game. But we didn't, and those guys came out, and that particular night they were the better team.
And why did things go wrong for you guys in that game?
Trust me, if we could have figured it out, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you about me not being in the playoffs. You don't know. They got up on us early, and you know, when you're fighting back against a very good team, it's you know, at halftime we came back and we gave a good run at it, and we gave all we had, and we just couldn't muster enough to put together enough runs to come back in that game.
And I look at the Cowboys season, and this was a season of missed opportunities. I mean, you talked about the Jets game, the Lions game, so on and so forth. You look at your season, how would you categorize the 2011 season for the Dallas Cowboys?
Anytime you don't go out and do what your goals are set at the end of the year, and our goals were to go to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl, so we deem it as disappointing. But we take the things that we can take from it and, you know, and we build on it. You know, last year we were, I believe, 6-10, and this year we were 8-8. So that's a marked improvement. You know, we were a better football team this year than we were last year, and we hope, you know, we're you know, one of those teams that are eager to get back into OTAs and get back in training camp so that we can, you know, get this team back in working, back down again, work out those kinks and get back on the field so that we can show our improvement from year to year.
We're talking to Cowboys wide receiver Jesse Holly. And Jesse, point blank, can you guys win a championship with Tony Romo as your quarterback?
Without a doubt. Tony's an elite quarterback. You know, he's an elite quarterback in this league, and he has all the physical tools that it takes to win football games and win championships. And he's one of those guys that, you know, if you were in a foxhole with, you know, a lot of times people don't get a chance to know Tony personally and see him every single day, but I've been blessed to be able to, and he's one of those guys. But if I was in a foxhole, he's one of the guys that I want with me.
And I agree with you on that. I think Tony Romo still is a championship-caliber quarterback. The numbers, in a lot of ways, speak for themselves. And, Jesse, earlier in the season, you had some big plays against the 49ers, and you were one of the reasons that you guys won that particular football game. Was that the highlight of your career to this point?
I would have to say yes. I mean, I would have to say yes. That game right there, just the magnitude of Dallas – 49ers, you know, when you look back at the legacy and the history of that historic rivalry, just to be playing in that game on the Cowboys side of it, it was a great thing. And not only to play in it, but to be a huge part of why we won the game, you know. And don't get me wrong, I don't think my catch goes down with the catch, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, that's one thing that always on the history. When you think back on 49ers and Cowboys, and you think about it on Candlestick Park history, that play has to be put in there somewhere. So that's huge for me, and it's definitely been one of the highlights of my career.
And I look at that play, Jesse, and I asked you, how'd you allow yourself to get caught?
I ran out of gas. Period. I mean, Dante Whitten had a good, you know, I took off and he took off, and, I, you know, I ran out of gas. I had to cover the special team play right before we came out that play. So, you know, people fell to realize that before we got the ball, I had to cover that special teams play. And so that was the first play in overtime and for us in overtime. And, I ran out of gas at the one, you know, but 77-78, we win the game. It doesn't really make a difference to me.
Basically. And you look at it, Jesse, you made your mark on special teams for the Cowboys this season. I was reading somewhere where you said your inspiration is Cowboys special teams legend Bill Bates. Talk about that.
Right. Well, you know, I got a chance to really spent some time with Bill Bates while we were filming Fourth and Long. And, you know, just to be around him and talk to him and understand how he got his start in the league, you look at him, you say, wow, this is a guy who, you know, they said wasn't talented. They said he shouldn't be in the league. They said this, they said this about him. But each and every year, he found a way to get on an active roster. And for 15 years, they couldn't find a way to cut him. And so I look at that as myself and say, you know, I want to be that guy that every time they go into the big room and are making those big roster decisions, when they get to number 16, Jesse Holly, I want them to be like, ah, you know, he's not we look for a receiver. He's this, he's that, he's getting old, he's this, and that. But we need him. We can't cut him, you know. And I said, hey, if I can do that for 10 years, that's a pretty good darn career.
That is. Anytime you can spend double-digit years in the NFL, that is a productive career. And
yeah.
Jesse, you went from cell phone salesman to Fourth and Long winner, ultimately to the NFL. Along the way, how close were you to giving up on the NFL, giving up on the dream of playing football?
Actually, before the show came about, I had a discussion with my godfather, and we just talked about, you know, me possibly moving on. Just saying, you know, he was saying that he didn't want me to be that guy who is, you know, you have these guys who chase this dream until they're 29, 30 years old, and it's hard to start a career at 30 years old, at 31 years old. And so, he, you know, at this particular time, I was about 23, 24 years old, and 25 years old. And he was just saying, like, hey, you know, I want you to realistically think this thing out. And if this year you can get with a football team, maybe it's time for you to hang him up. And I thought about it long and hard, and he was right. And so I kind of had two options. I had already filled out the paperwork and stuff like that to actually enter the police academy August of 2009. I was going to police academy that August of 2009 if I didn't get with a team. And the show came about, and, you know, that July of 2009, I was in the training camp with the Dallas Cowboys.
Wow. And let's talk about the show Fourth and Long, the show that was hosted by Michael Irvin, reality TV. You knew what was on the line. You win, you get an opportunity with the Cowboys. What was your mindset going into that show?
That I couldn't lose. I had nothing else. I didn't have any money. I didn't have anywhere to stay. I was like literally just like I had nothing else. Like, this was my last shot. Like, I had to win this one. It was no excuses. And it's one thing when you go into a training camp and it's just you and the people there, and you come back home, people are like, what happened? And you can make up all types of lies and excuses what happened. Or they didn't like me, I didn't fit the system. But now I had an opportunity to get to a team, and it was broadcasted on national TV. So for the world to watch, there was no way of hiding if I was to quit or if I didn't perform well, if I didn't do things that I had to do to make myself successful. There's no way to hide from it. And so you got to go back and face everybody, and you can't say, well, oh, they didn't like me. And they can be like, nah, we watched the show. You quit, or this guy just outbeat you. And so, you know, that was one of my biggest motivations, is that the world is watching. Nobody, you can't hide from not being successful. And so I was like, this is all I have left. And it was either that or go back to working security and selling cell phones. And that was a life I just didn't want to do.
And would you do reality TV again? Or are your days of reality TV over?
I'm done. I'm done with reality TV. I mean, look at all these shows now, and Housewives and Jersey Shore and basketball. I love it. I can't do that, man. I mean, you know, it's so much fluff and so much stuff going on, man. I can't do any more reality TV.
We're talking to Cowboys wide receiver Jesse Holly, Mr. Fourth and One himself, Fourth and Long, I should say, himself. And Jesse, Michael Irvin was the host of that show. What has Michael Irvin meant to you?
Mike has been a tremendous a leader in my life. He's been someone who I can reach out to. He's just been someone that's been encouraging me. It's kind of like my inside ear. You know, a lot of stuff that he hears that I may not hear, and you know, it kind of gives me tips on, you know, it's like having a wide receiver encyclopedia, you know, at speed dial. And then, you know, about being a wide receiver, I can just pick up the phone and call Mike, and, you know, it's great to have him on my side.
Definitely is. Mike Orvin's a Hall of Fame wide receiver, and it's good to have a Hall of Famer on your side. And playoffs are going on now, Jesse. We're watching them, and it's going to be some good matchups this week. But all in all, who do you have going to the Super Bowl?
Oh, man, who do I have going to the Super Bowl? They can cancel Super Bowl for all I care. Dallas isn't playing in it. No, but, you know, you have to, like, of course, and they'll meet up in the NFC Championship, I believe. But when you look at it, Green Bay and New Orleans, Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers, those two, man, they're just – right now, they're just moving at a pace, and they're so surgical what they do. You know, I mean, they're back there dissecting things, and they got you would think there's five footballs out there. I mean, they're slinging that football around like it's on the playground. So I mean, definitely one of those two teams I see going back out of the NFC. A good friend of mine is playing quarterback right now for the Texans, T.J. Yates.
Okay.
I'm partial to the Texans because I know TJ. You know, he's a Carolina guy, and so I don't know. I mean, out of the AFC, you can't overlook Captain America. He's always going to be in football games, but you know, I'm a man of God, and I'm a Christ believer, and so you know, I'm Tebowing. You know, what I'm saying I'm on the Tebow mania trip too. And so, you know, hey, anything can happen on that AFC side, you know, with Tebow, you know, willing his team to win and Captain America, you know, and then Houston's playing well. So you got to, you know, there's still Baltimore out there. So it's a lot. And so you never know. I don't know.
We'll
I don't know. I think I'm going to say New Orleans and the Texans in the Super Bowl.
New Orleans and the Texans, we shall see if that happens. We shall definitely see. And, Jesse, what do you need to do now to kind of take that next step in your career? What do you need to do to have a successful 2012 season, personally, for yourself?
Well, you know, just continue to work hard. Continue to work hard, and I have my off-season goals ahead of me. Just getting with some people that I know will make me better. You know, working harder than I ever worked before. Continue to take care of my body, you know, because as you get older, you only got one body, and so you don't get a replacement. So just continue to take care of my body, and you know, right now I'm in that after the season little rest period before I start hitting training again. But just you know, my thing is I want to continue to get better at my route running, make sure I stay in top physical condition, keep my weight down, and just you know, improve in all areas. You know, just more. Sound in the offense, learn more, and there's always so much you can learn. You know, when you think you've learned it all, that's when it's time for you to hang your cleats up. And so, you know, I feel like there's a lot I have to learn. This year I got a chance to, you know, play more wide receiver, and so I'm looking forward to next year to building on the small success I had this year at receiver and continue to be that special team demon that my team need me to be. And, you know, like, hey, and for the next 10 years, if you know, they can't find a way to cut me, I'll be happy.
And real quickly now, Jesse, where can fans connect with you?
You can reach me. We can reach me on Twitter at Mr. Fourth and Long. That's Mr. M R 4 T H A N D L O N G. Mr. Fourth and Long. And that's pretty much it. I have a Facebook fan page. You can hit me on that. It's the fan page of Jesse Holly at Facebook. That's pretty much it. If you see me anywhere in Dallas, holla at me. If you see me anywhere in New Jersey when I'm at home, holla at me. If you see me anywhere, if I'm in your city, holla at me. I'm the nicest person in the world. If I'm eating lunch, come on, have a seat with me. I might buy you lunch. You never know.
Well, I mean, I hope I see you somewhere because I might take you up on that offer.
Definitely do.
Jesse, it was a pleasure talking to you, man. We wish you nothing but the best of luck in this off season. Nothing but the best of luck in 2012. Appreciate you, and let's do this again.
All right, man. Thank you so much.
Jesse Holly, Cowboys wide receiver. Pleasure talking to him. We want to thank everybody who joined us, everybody who listened. And make sure you listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/PGIN. For everybody here at Go Forward, have a great day. See you later.